Auckland Greens are thinking local and talking to the people with ideas for a better city and a richer future. Every Monday on Green Auckland.
Kia ora once again, this is David Clendon, and once again, welcome to Green Auckland. This is a program where we talk to people with a view about issues that are important to our favourite city. I'm a Green MP, so everything's going to have a green flavour to it. But we invite you again to listen in and learn a little and maybe have some ideas about what we have to say today. Now, for reasons that are much too complicated to explain, we're talking today in the studio of Fresh FM, which is a Nelson-based local access radio. And we'd just like to thank Fresh FM for hosting us today. All the access radio stations, of course, share the same kaupapa about making good, strong community radio and using radio to build communities. So we're grateful to Fresh FM for hosting us and giving us the means to go to air in comfort. You've got two Aucklanders talking to one another in Nelson today. There's a particular reason why I wanted this program to go to air this week, which I'll come to later. But my guest today is John Stansfield. He arrived from Thailand just minutes ago, so if you hear some gentle snoring in the background, that'll be John catching up on a 40 winks. He's a pretty tired man, but he's very kindly agreed to come and have a chat to us. John, I've described as an Aucklander, but he's really a very well-known and respected citizen of the People's Republic of Waiheke Island. If I gave you John's whole CV, we'd take up our whole time this morning. So suffice to say, he's a social entrepreneur. He was a principal of the Waiheke Resource Trust, which was a hugely successful community-based waste management and recycling business. And unfortunately, that was not supported by the Auckland Council in the last term. But that's a story for another day. John was the initiator of an academic program for leadership and management in the not-for-profit sector. He's been involved in the union movement and in a host of other social justice issues and movements. We're talking to him today with his hat on as the Advocacy and Campaign Director for Oxfam New Zealand. So thank you, John. Welcome. Thanks for coming in. And first off, I guess I've said you're the Campaign and Advocacy Director for Oxfam. Tell us a bit about Oxfam, a bit of its history, what it does here in New Zealand.
Thanks, David. Oxfam's a great organisation which has its core kaupapa to end the injustice of poverty, which is kind of a big ask. We've been around for 21 years in New Zealand, and we're part of a confederation across the world of 15 other affiliates, having originally been founded in the UK as the Oxford Committee on Famine and Relief some 70-odd years ago. In New Zealand, we are entirely independently constituted, and we're a registered charity with our own board of directors and staff in Auckland, Wellington, and staff offshore in the Pacific.
Mm-hmm. And what's your relationship with the international movement, with Oxfam internationally? You run autonomously, I presume? Or?
We do, but we work together and we collaborate on campaigns. I've just come back from a meeting in Bangkok where I've been working with food activists from South Africa and Papua New Guinea, Indonesia, Laos, Sri Lanka, and Timor-Leste. It was an extremely rewarding week. Looking at how we can ensure that people have enough food to eat always in these countries.
Yeah, it's a pretty simple requirement, isn't it? But obviously a hugely important one. New Zealand clearly is an Asia-Pacific country. We're a Pacific nation. And so is that your focus? So do you particularly look to the Pacific in terms of relationships?
Yes, very much. And as Oxfam develops and evolves, it appears that we will become what we call the managing affiliate, so the kind of lead place for the Pacific. And that's a terrific joy for me because my heart has been in the Pacific since I went in 1976 and became a volunteer in the newly independent state of Papua New Guinea. So we are Pacific-focused, and it means that our campaigns will be slightly different than those perhaps in sub-Saharan Africa, where people are suffering from dire circumstances and extreme hunger. In much of the Pacific, we're not suffering from extreme hunger, although increasingly we are suffering from malnutrition, from very poor nutrition and rapidly changing cultural practices which are bringing with them a wave of non-communicable diseases like obesity and diabetes.
Okay, so that's a function of a very different economy and, as you say, a change in the culture of those places. Do we have, is Australia a partner in this?
Yep. Yeah. Yes, no, the meeting was hosted by Oxfam Australia and Oxfam Great Britain, and we worked together with Australia very closely in Papua New Guinea and Vanuatu and the Solomon Islands.
And you're completely independent of any government agency, aren't you? You're an NGO?
Yes, we are.
Yeah. Excellent, yeah.
Supported, I must say, by a very rich vein and cross-section of New Zealanders up and down the country who support our work and make it possible.
Oh, great. So never miss the opportunity. If somebody wanted to support Oxfam New Zealand, how would they go about doing that?
Oh, we're really easy to find on a Google. there are dozens of different ways you can support Oxfam as a regular giver, making a one-off donation to an appeal, or using some of our more interesting approaches, such as the supporting Oxfam's biggest coffee break, which is on in Fairtrade Fortnight, or our amazing range of goods in the Oxfam Unwrapped series for presents for those you love.
Okay. You know, Fair Trade you mentioned, and particularly Fair Trade Fortnight. And, of course, I believe Fair Trade Fortnight kicks off today.
It surely does. In fact, it kicked off in Auckland, I'm given to understand, this morning in an event hosted by Mayor Len Brown and the Auckland Fair Trade Committee to confirm that Auckland Council, which is the largest council in the country, representing 1.5 million citizens, has decided to become a fair trade city.
Excellent. And what does that mean, to say we are now a fair trade city? What will we see? What will it happen?
It's
there?
Signing up to a set of values, really, and saying we're going to, in our purchasing and in our behaviour, try to put fair purchasing and fair choices first. I was talking to one of their sustainability coordinators, who's a really enthusiastic young man, fellow Ngāti Waiheke, of course, and he was telling me that they have these quite sophisticated little coffee carts all over the council, because it's an enormous organisation, and so one of the first things they would be doing is working to make fair trade coffee the default position on the cart. So you had to, in fact, select, no, I do not want fair trade coffee, if you wanted to have something different. So little things like that are the decisions that people make purchasing day by day quickly build to real identity and open the door for further sustainability actions in the future.
Excellent. Yeah, I guess most of us see the fair trade label attached to cafes, to chocolate, to some of these consumer items we see day to day. How extensive is the movement in Auckland? Tell us a bit more. What does it mean if I see a cafe, for example, saying we sell only or provide fair trade coffee? What does that tell me about the product?
Well, it tells you that's where you want to shop, really. Yeah. Fair trade is a system that attempts to ensure that you, the consumer, can have confidence that the purchase you're making is consistent with your ethical position. I like to think of it as simply as this, David. You know, when I'm putting a banana in my daughter's lunchbox, I just want to know that whoever grew that banana, that their daughter got to go to school as well. And that's a very simple take on it, but really what I think it carries the sentiment. Fair trade is a system of independent verification that things have been ethically produced. And ethically produced means that they have had fair wages, that people have had fair working conditions, increasingly that they have a fair and open opportunity to organise as they see fit and develop their own communities in their own way. And sadly, that's still not true for large parts of the world.
True. Yes, I'm aware there's a company in Auckland called All Good Bananas who import fair trade bananas, and it's been interesting to see some of their presentations. I believe that it can go as far back down the chain as actually providing some seed money, funding to growers, very low interest or no interest loans, so that those growers don't fall into some sort of a debt trap, which can be a very, very destructive thing in a developing nation.
Yeah, sure. All Good are a really interesting company, actually, because they're really trying hard to do a really good thing. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy a lot the collaborations we're able to do together. They are very funky. They're very quick to put a gorilla suit on and burst into a boardroom with bunches of bananas, which is just kind of my way, my sort of social messaging stuff. But Oxfam and All Good Bananas and a group in Samoa called Women in Business and Development have been involved in a project to try and get more Pacific products on our shelves. And initially, that was a program that was also supported by the Tyndall Foundation to try and get fresh bananas out of the Pacific and onto our shelves. And sadly, that has not been successful at this point. And I'm disappointed about that because as a kid, I grew up with those beautiful, fat, stubby little lady-fingered bananas, which if you go back to the Pacific, you'll consume heaps of. And they taste so much better. I have every faith that the problem will get solved. But along the way, as people found that it was really difficult to make it work with what is a fairly low-value crop and with the strict phytosanitary and biosecurity rules that New Zealand has, they came up with a new product called dried bananas. And these are not those hideous banana chips that you find in plates at parties that are, you just know is waiting to happen. These are more like a semi-dried fruit leather, and they're absolutely gorgeous. Kids think they're lollies. Small product coming into a new market. You know, these guys, they wanted to do the right thing, but they said, you know, we can't really afford to go through a whole labelling system and verification while we test our way to market on this. What other way could we do it? And what we've ended up doing is actually putting an Oxfam label on the bags. Now, those bananas are harvested and dried in Samoa with a partner that we've had for more than 10 years, so whom we're pretty confident of. Mm. They're even packaged in Samoa, so they come into the country in their nice little bags and they're well marketed. So that's another kind of labelling. It's where we as an organisation accept, gosh, as an interim step, let's try and get these guys to market. Let's use our pretty broad reputation to stand behind them. Similarly, another way that things come to market that you won't see a label on, but they're still really good, is via the World Fair Trade Organisation. Easy to get caught on your tongue and almost say World Free Trade Organization about that, but it's not. Yes. And, of course, foremost amongst those are the Trade Aid Group, a very long-standing history in New Zealand based in Christchurch. And people think of Trade Aid and they think of the little shops that you could go into, and those are lovely for handicrafts and everything. But, boy, if you really want to get into some fair trade stuff, get onto the Trade Aid website, and there's a whole bunch of stuff that you can buy online and make good decisions.
Go for it there.
And they're really worth supporting.
Mm. Yes, because as you know, with the Greens Party, we've been talking for a long time about fair trade, not free trade, because the free trade label, unfortunately, doesn't necessarily, to our point of view, represent a genuine level field, to the extent that, yes, we can import very cheap products, but there's a reason they're cheap. And those reasons are about environmental degradation, inadequate labour control and management, all of those things. But so it's interesting, you fair trade, as you say, is a certification program. So if I buy a branded fair trade product, I know that the whole chain of custody has been monitored. But you're suggesting that maybe that's not always possible. So we need to, I guess it's a bit like the journey to sustainability. You never quite get there, but it is all about being on the journey.
Sure, sure. And fair trade labelling is very rigorously looked at. You know, they are good standards. You run a balance between if we make this any harder, will people be able to do it? Versus if we make this too easy, will people be able to fudge it, if you like? Just come back to your broader point about the food system. What we have in the world today is 7 billion people who are consuming food and 1.4 billion people who are producing it. And there is a market, we are told, yet 70% of that food goes through the hands of just 500 companies. And in the case of grain, which is a staple, we have it two
is
or three times a day.
Internationally, you're saying yes. 70% of the food supplied around the world is 500 companies.
Yeah. In the case of grain, 93% of it goes through the hands of five companies. And, you know, you get incredible distortions when you start to get that kind of accumulation of power in the food companies.
Wow.
And you see
you
things...
You may know, just to interrupt, that at the moment, politically in Parliament, we're struggling a bit with Fonterra to the degree that Fonterra is an enormous company by New Zealand standards. Mm-hmm. Fonterra, to be fair, want to do the right thing in terms of dairy pricing, but we're struggling to find a mechanism to ensure there is a degree of competition, just to keep them honest. I mean, we all want that. And you're saying five companies internationally just about manage the grain. That's extraordinary.
Yep. And those numbers will fall. The 500 companies and the five companies, they will continue to amalgamate and come together. And so you get, you know, in the case of internationally traded fruit and vegetable commodities, some extraordinary things happen. I looked at some work the other day that suggested that a pineapple being sold in a supermarket at $3.50 might return 1 New Zealand cent to the person who grew it.
1 cent.
1 cent. As little as 1 cent. So that's clearly an area where we need to start stepping up some fair trade.
Mm.
In New Zealand, of course, the big one is bananas. Bananas is a $100 million a year business in New Zealand. And so far, 2% of that is fair trade and growing.
Excellent. And as consumers, of course, again, being a consumer is also a political choice. So we can, with the way we spend our dollars can drive the market to some extent. I guess the product most of us are most familiar with in terms of fair trade is coffee. Do you have any idea what percentage of the coffee sold here might be fair trade either?
No, I haven't got that at the top of my somewhat jet-lagged brain, David, but
yes,
what I can tell you is that fair trade goods exhibited phenomenal success during the global economic crisis. So you look at every other category of goods, they taper off. In the case of things that were growing very strongly, like the organic sector, organics continued to grow, but its rate of growth began to decline. But fair trade goods outstripped everything in terms of just straight out growth during the period. And this, of course, is during a period when consumers typically have less money in their pockets.
So it's counterintuitive because fair trade product can be more expensive, and you would expect that to be people's disposable income diminishes. Normally it's the so-called luxury or the high-dollar items that fall away. So what's going on there?
Yeah. Well, I think people are making good choices. The other thing that happens is that as fair trade becomes more mainstream, it ceases to be a lot more expensive. So you think about the nice cup of coffee that you had at a cafe, perhaps waiting for your plane, you might have paid $4 or $5 for that. A fair trade farmer and his community may have made as much as 7 cents out of that $4. And you think, well, that's really dreadful, but a non-fair trade farmer only got 3. Mm. So the impact of those between 3 and 7 cents on your cup of coffee is now pretty well nothing. It can be absorbed in the transaction, and the fair trade stuff isn't really costing you any more. And that's what happens when fair trade stuff, goods start to enter the market in volume.
Mm. Well, it's refreshing to hear that people continue to stick to their principles and to their choices to buy ethically, even if times are a bit tough. That's a good thing to hear. Coming back a bit to Auckland, being a fair trade city, what can we do? What can people, either in their homes or in their workplaces or within their communities, do to spread the word to make that more real at the moment, I guess? Okay, today's the day we launch the campaign, we declare ourselves fair trade. How do we make it real?
Well, there'll be a great many opportunities over the next fortnight with the Fair Trade Fortnight. Is an annual event. It's running from the 5th to the 20th of May. kicked off this morning, as I said, by a breakfast at Auckland City. This year, Fair Trade Fortnight has got a little nuance to it because it's really, it's trying to encourage a much broader conversation about fairness. And across the country over the next 2 weeks, 100,000 Kiwis will be having a conversation about fairness as they enjoy their Oxfam's biggest coffee break. That'll be one of the events that are on. There'll be various fair trade breakfasts. There are auctions online that you can follow. In fact, I think one of those clever people from Flight of the Conchords went up for auction today online. Brett's gone up online, and you can follow that on Trade Me.
We're bidding for Brett, are we?
We're bidding for the opportunity to have a fair trade breakfast with Brett, yeah.
That'd be an entertaining breakfast, I imagine.
I think it would, actually. A number of prominent New Zealanders put themselves up for that very generously to help make it better understood. I think you can expect to see quite a lot of stuff in the media over the next couple of weeks. And there's always the good old World Wide Web to fall back on. If you want to make some good fair trade decisions, have a look back at both the Oxfam or the Fair Trade Association of New Zealand website. Where can I get my fair trade goods? What can I get? Because we're not just talking coffee and tea anymore. Sure. We're talking T-shirts. We're talking kids' shoes, soccer balls, and an increasing range of goods.
Excellent. And you mentioned the unwrapped gift, I think was the phrase you used. I'm aware I've got things like Mother's Day coming up.
Oxfam Unwrapped is a great tool. It's for people who've decided there's enough junk in the world and the one thing Mother doesn't need is more plastic.
Another ornament.
Yeah, and so we offer gifts like, rather than giving Mother plastic, you could give her a tribute that said she's bought two chickens for a village that's developing a chicken project, or you've bought a goat, or you've bought some ducks, or you've bought seeds maybe if you're more of a vegetarian persuasion, or maybe if you didn't like Mum that much, you could buy a pile of poo, which would be where you were donating some money in to make sure that organic fertiliser was available to a new...
It could send mixed messages. Hey, Mum, I've got your bag of dung here. Yes, I'm sure.
I'm pretty sure there'll be a few bosses got it for Christmas, actually.
There you go, yes. And I believe people, you talk about the big coffee break. I understand people can actually host the fair trade coffee breaks in their own homes and their own companies, whatever.
Yep, they're pretty well signed off now for the period because it's quite a logistic nightmare, but there's bound to be one going on somewhere near you. There is a Facebook web page on Coffee Break that you can have a look up at. Many workplaces are having them. I have to do a big shout out to the NZEI, the Primary School Teachers Union, who really took this on board and have booked hundreds of coffee breaks as part of training programs that they're running with their members. A lot of people do this in schools and a lot of workplaces. It doesn't have to be a law firm. You've got good guys there like NZ Strong Construction in Mount Eden out there on the job sites. They're having a big coffee break as well. And that's about all of us together as Kiwis celebrating the value of fairness, and it's part of our identity.
Yeah, I think that's a point well made, that I think most New Zealanders do hold that ethic. You know, internally we actually believe in fairness and being quite straightforward and open, and this is a quite nice way, I guess, to internationalise that. Does Oxfam do any work, if you like, internally within New Zealand, aside from the fair trade progression? You're more... Your view is outward, I guess, from our own borders?
We're predominantly outward-focused. Mm-hmm. We develop a range of products that we've used in public meetings and, town halls and in schools. We do, of course, advocacy work in New Zealand where we try and influence the New Zealand government, particularly to stand in solidarity with the peoples of the Pacific who will be the first affected and are being affected by climate instability and potentially affected by unfair trade laws. We're developing products which are available for use with activist groups on campus. And when we find a really good film or speaker we run tours. So last year we were part of a confederation that brought the famous Dr. Jim Salinger out from the US. And we also ran climate change tours in New Zealand and film tours. So we try and build some constituency locally.
Excellent, yeah. Yeah, I have to say my colleague Kennedy Graham last night made a speech in the House. The government is proposing some legislation to basically block boat people, so-called boat people, refugees from coming into New Zealand, to give us some laws to enable us to put them into detention and all sorts of terrible things. Kennedy was first up, I mean, the likelihood we think of people sailing across the Pacific in these very questionable craft is a nonsense. But more importantly, we believe that we should be dealing with a problem at source. We are going to see climate refugees, and my view is, an idea I suspect Oxfam might share it, is within reason we should be opening our doors and recognising that given we've contributed to that problem of ocean rise and some of those smaller islands are already experiencing that, we should be willing to take some responsibility to provide those people with homes and a future in a way that I think, again, most New Zealand communities are inherently open to that sort of fair approach. So,
yeah, it would be a terrible injustice of the people least responsible on the planet for man-made climate change and global warming because they have no heavy industries and they've never had coal were the ones made homeless, and we were to try and say it's not our problem.
Indeed, yes. Yes, I was very moved. Last year I was fortunate enough to meet a delegation from Kiribati, and they were mostly elderly men. They were seniors in their community, and they basically said that they would never leave their islands, but they wanted to know that the next generation would have opportunities in the event that their islands become uninhabitable, yes. But so I guess that's another big conversation we could have about climate change and the future of our people, our cousins, literally, in the Pacific and our neighbours. But I guess we have the immediate focus for Auckland is to let's make this whole fair trade label, let's make fair trade Auckland a reality, see what we can do to be part of that. We're just about out of time, so anything else you'd like to say about what you do and what we can do to share that vision?
Well, I think we can start off by trying to make fair choices ourselves and talk to others about fair choices. You know, many of us go to work. In many of those workplaces, there's tea, coffee and sugar. What about talking to the boss and saying, you know, I would feel a lot more comfortable during my tea break knowing that the people who picked the tea were fairly looked after as well.
Yeah, simple as that. Thank you, John Stansfield from Oxfam, for coming to talk to us today on Green Auckland about making this city, with all its other attributes, let's make it a fair trade city as well. Kia ora.
Aotearoa's most populous city could also be its greenest city. Explore ideas for a Green Auckland every Monday at 9:05 a.m. or anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/Green Auckland.
Find out what you've been missing on planetaudio.org.nz.
Pozdrav svima iz Aucklanda.
Listen to Serbian Community Radio for the latest news, sport, music and local events. Tune in every Wednesday night at 6 o'clock on Planet FM 104.6.
Družite se s nama sredom od 18 do 18.30 na 104.6 Planet FM.
Yesteryear? Join me, Albert Chang, Saturday nights from 7:50 p.m. for Vinyl Revival right here on Planet FM. You can also listen online, planetaudio.org.nz/Vinyl Revival.
Changemakers, innovators, activists. David Clendon meets them all every Monday at 9:05 on Green Auckland. And you can catch the show anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/Green Auckland. Our regular morning program, Korean Catholic Radio, broadcasting Monday to Friday on Planet FM, joins us at 9:40.